All right, guys, my name is Kent Andrews.
And my name is Brandon Ford.
And this is the first podcast of Barely Above Average Outdoors. This is something that we've been wanting to start for the last year or so. We've been listening to a lot of podcasts of different outdoorsmen and different hunters, and kind of gave us the idea to get one started that talks a little bit about how to be a husband, a father, and an outdoorsman, and what it means to bring all that stuff together, and how to do it successfully and define your success throughout the season. Brandon, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, I think you pretty much wrapped it up there. We just, like Ken said, you know, we've talked about this for a while, about starting a podcast, and, you know, we both have families, growing families at that. You know, we're just trying to find that decent balance between, you know, normal work life. I mean, we both work 40, 50 hours a week, you know, plus we have our families. But we absolutely enjoy the outdoors, you know, so that's something we want to, you know, if we can help one person, you know, share how we're able to kind of all wrap that into our year, you know, throughout different seasons, hunting season, fishing season, you know, summertime. If we can, you know, help share what we do with other folks, you know, that's our goal here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's easy to get caught up in what it takes to be successful. I spend a lot of time, I have an hour commute each day to work, and I spend time just soaking up as much information as I can. I listen to a lot of guys out there that have the same passion for the outdoors that we do, but it seems like they all have a large amount of time to dedicate to being out there scouting and finding deer and really honing in on that. And sometimes it can make you feel a little inferior when it comes to, hey, I'm a dad, I've got a 40 to 50 hour week job, and how do I find the same success? So Brandon and I've spent the last 2 years or better hunting together and have found a little bit of that balance, and not without some growing pains, but that's kind of what we want to accomplish with this podcast, is to help other people find that balance and know that you still can find success. You just have to do it in ways that get you in, get you out, and go from there. So I've been hunting since I was, since I can remember. My dad and my grandpa took me outside. I learned how to squirrel hunt when I was a young kid, and that was a big part of my life, is hunting squirrels in Louisiana, and that was a process that we did every year on opening weekend, the first weekend in October, and my love for the outdoors kind of grew from that moment. And now we're focused on shooting deer and specifically bow hunting, like many others are, and we've found some success with some urban hunting and a little bit of success traveling out of the state. The next several podcasts will help address that and how we found it, and hopefully it'll bring some knowledge and entertainment to other folks.
Yeah, and a little bit about me. My hunting experience is a little bit different than Kent's. I grew up North Texas. My father, he was a bird hunter, so pretty much all of my youth hunting was ducks and dove, and that's pretty much what we did. We did a lot of fishing, but we didn't do much, you know, much other kinds of game hunting. It wasn't until I went to college that I kind of started picking up on deer hunting a little bit. You know, I went with a buddy a few times, you know, during high school out to their deer lease in West Texas, and that was always enjoyable, but, you know, it was never my thing until I actually learned to do it myself. So when I was in college over in Nacogdoches, I kind of picked up a bow, and there was public land really close to where I lived, 10 minutes away, so it was enjoyable for me to be able to, one, get out in the woods, and two, be able to kind of learn deer movement and patterns and just that whole different way of hunting that I had never experienced before. So that kind of has gotten me hooked on deer hunting in the last few years, particularly. Like Kent said, we've had some pretty good success at it. We've had good success at, you know, some of this urban hunting. You see some of that on some of these YouTube channels and the outdoor channels. It's kind of the up and coming thing is the urban hunting, or has been, and it is here now. And we kind of picked up on that, and we've done well with it. That's not to say we don't do our fair share of you know, just regular public land hunting too. I mean, we do, and it is a challenge, and that's really what we enjoy. You know, and with this podcast, that's hopefully something we want to share. You know, how do you break down 8,000 acres of public land on a Saturday? You know, because that's really what we do. I mean, we work throughout the week. We prepare during the week for that Saturday or Sunday hunt, once or twice a month, and that's what we do. So that's what we're going to share with y'all.
Yeah, that's one thing that I struggled with over the last couple of years is how do you define your goals for a season? Because it's easy to get on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and see these guys hold a big buck with old grip and grin, as Stephen Ranella says, and talks about how, you know, how do you do that and still have a balance to be a dad, to be a father, and maintain a job like most folks have that require you to be 40 hours a week. I'm in the medical field, so there's not a lot of downtime. And, you know, 2 years ago, we kind of set out to figure out how to kill a deer in an urban setting and how to kill a deer in our local area within half hour of the house. And fortunately, we have some public land that's that close. And we also have some private land that we've acquired permission on. And that opportunity to hunt close to home and still provide that presence is what really got us excited about that. I think maybe the best thing that we could start this podcast with would be a recap of our 2020 and 2021 deer season and talk about from how we got started with this summer and what our plan was and kind of where that took us. So Brandon has a knack for knocking on a door and getting permission on a piece of property. And so we discovered that this past summer, and it wasn't something that we had really done a lot of up until recently. So Brandon, tell them about what that was like and kind of what sent you down that path.
Yeah, kind of like what you said, I do enjoy, so I'm a people person, for the most part. There's some people I don't like, but I think we're all kind of that way. I almost enjoy the getting out and meeting people and knocking on doors and meeting strangers almost as much as I do opening morning, climbing up in that deer stand. There's just something about it for me. I enjoy it. So what we did is we got on our hunt stand app and we started looking at blocks of wood close to where we live. You know, part of being a family man and being outdoors is, you know, we're trying to stay close to the house. So what I did is I set a radius from my home, and I said, you know, within this 15-mile radius, these are the blocks of woods that I think would be good. You know, just driving by the road, seeing what they look like. You have some creeks and some hills, some open pasture land, some real heavy woods. You know, so you can kind of do some road scouting, and then you get on hunt stand. And then, you know, we try and find, you know, locations where these folks live. So, you know, we tried the letter thing in the 2019 season, you know, sending a letter through the mail. That was not really successful for us.
Trying to reach out on Facebook.
Yeah, we tried Facebook, social media, just any the white pages, anything you can possibly imagine. How can we get in touch with these people? And what we realized is that unless it's face to face, there's not a good success rate of being able to lock down that property. And so we did. We went and started knocking on doors. And as a matter of fact, I printed off a list. I had my, you know, top 10 properties that this is what I really, really want. I want to lock down at least three or four of these properties if I can. You know, I was hopeful I could get 3 of 10. And actually, of those first 10, it actually turned out a little bit better than what we hoped for.
Yeah, I remember you called me. You said, I just got permission on that 200-acre block. And I was like, are you kidding me? And you said, no, dude. And I said, well, what does that mean? Did you get permission for both of us? And so
he was worried he wasn't going to get in on it.
Yeah, I was like, what did they say? How'd the conversation go? And you're like, man, I pulled up and I knocked on his door and told him who I was, and we had a discussion and what I like to do and what I was trying to accomplish, and he gave me permission. And I think one thing that helped make us successful is that we honed in on bow hunting only. It seems easier to get permission Absolutely. When you bow hunt only. They're not worried about you out there shooting a rifle or you know, shooting a bunch of rounds off, and you know, to be within bow range of an animal, you pretty much got to know exactly what it is. You're not going to make too many mistakes. And you know, got those letters of liability kind of going and say, hey, we're just here to hunt. Give us permission. That way, if a game warden or somebody shows up, they know we're allowed to be there and build that relationship with that landowner. Not to mention, when you visit with someone who is older and hasn't been on their land in a while and doesn't have the means to get out there, a human presence on a piece of property is a good thing. It helps keep trespassers out, and we found trash and put no trespassing signs up on these properties, and you know, really kind of be a steward for those guys that don't get to go out there very much, and try to not take it for granted and use the land as we intend to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's you know, that part of it is pretty key. You know, it's, you know, some of the closest public land as far as deer access from my house right now is almost an hour away, you know, so, you know, that's enjoyable, but it's not really feasible all the time. So like Ken said, trying to be good stewards of this land that we do get access to really goes a long way, and goes a long way with being able to lock down these properties in consecutive years. You know, some of these properties, so the county that we hunt, we can only harvest one buck over 13 inches here in Smith County. So a couple of these properties are both in Smith County. You know, if we're able to harvest our target buck on property A, we still want access to property B for this year and next year and the years to come, you know. So maintaining that healthy relationship with that landowner, whatever that might be, picking up trash, fencing a couple old barbed wire fences that just need to be fixed. You know, one of these has just an old logging road that a couple of, you know, just dead, rotted out pine trees have fallen across. Just moving those out, you know, and a lot of that stuff can be done in the off season. But that's stuff that those landowners, they appreciate. They don't expect necessarily, but they certainly appreciate it. You know, and it goes a long way with being able to keep these properties locked down, where it's just access for us. You know, low pressure. You know, try and keep a good relationship with the neighbors when and if you see them. You try not to have any encounters with them if possible most of the time. It's kind of our philosophy that less is more. You know, the less people see you, the less they're going to ask questions, the less they're going to care. So that's just kind of something that we've picked up.
Yeah, I mean, and within a week of starting that whole process, we had more properties than we really knew what to do with. So it became, so all of a sudden we have access to 1,000 acres in 15 different blocks, and we're trying to figure out what does that mean and how do we find a deer on that. And that's kind of where we both went through those growing pains of finding balance, because as soon as you get new property, you want to spend time on it, you want to scout it, you want to hang cameras, and we're a state that you can feed in, so you know, we start putting some bait out so we can get some pictures of deer on camera. And I remember hanging those first cameras on some of those pieces of property, and the next thing I knew, we were out of cameras. We had, you know, 8 cameras out of the gate. I said, well, we got 1 camera on each piece of property, and next thing I know, we had 10 cameras and
we'd
12
get up
cameras
real early one, you know, on a Saturday morning. You know, we'd be at the property right at daybreak. You know, most of the time this is the middle of summer. It was hot, you know, so we get out there right at daybreak. We have 2 or 3 cameras with us for this piece of property. You know, you walk as quickly as you can. You know, you try and walk a 100-acre track, break it down, you know, do some pre-scouting if you can, you know, and you run out of places to put cameras, or you run out of cameras pretty quick. And there's a lot of places you wish you had an extra camera to put there,
especially when you've never been on a piece.
Definitely, you know, and you go through this property and you see good sign, places you think maybe good bedding areas, good open spots, you get some good crossings, so you run out of just resources rather quickly.
Yeah, so you know, we deployed cameras initially and went back and checked 2 or 3 weeks later, and then started moving cameras around once we had pictures of deer on certain areas, and then started trying to fine tune that. The area that we hunt is not a, like you hear a lot of situations where you have bed to feed and these big open. We hunt hardwood bottoms for the most part, and a deer can bed anywhere. There's a thicket on every turn, you know, for a deer to be at. And so we started trying to figure out what it means to break down a piece of property in an area like that. And it took us a little bit to get pictures, but once we started getting pictures, I think we had more high caliber bucks for us, which, let's be honest, is not a giant buck, you know, but for us it was exciting because now we're having pictures of deer on camera, that deer that we've never been able to get on camera in the past. And I think a lot of that is we had a strategic plan when we went into it. We said we'll acquire properties, we'll find the best spots on those properties, and then we'll try and find a target buck on that property. And and frankly, it didn't even have to be a target buck at the time. I said, let's find some does to shoot with our bow and get comfortable. So we did that, and matter of fact, the very first buck picture we got, was on one of our cell cameras, and we were out on another piece of property hanging cameras trying to find and break down that spot. And Brandon said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, what? He said, come look at this. And so I walked over to his phone. He showed me a picture of a 10-point. We were high-fiving right there. It's August, right? We're high-fiving going, we got a deer that's worthy of a shoot.
We thought we had our season wrapped up. Yeah. You know, and at that time, you see a 10 in velvet, and it's there's a lot of emotion there. And little did we know, our season was that was just the beginning of the emotions for this season.
Yeah, for sure.
Say that.
I remember there was one piece of property in particular that had a large number of bucks, more bucks than it did does, and we were getting consistent pictures on that piece of property, and I thought, this is going to be something to this. I mean, how often do you get pictures every day of quality deer, shooter bucks for us, which is greater than 13 inches in East Texas, but some of them were far greater than that,
and mature deer at that. And we're not just talking about, you know, year and a half, 2 year and a half year old deer. I mean, some of these bucks on this particular property are mature deer. I mean, at least 4 to 5 years old, you know, 4.5, 5 year old deer, based on the evidence that we're seeing on the property, some of the other deer there to compare them to. It was pretty exciting for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of like Brandon said, that was the beginning. So we spent the rest of that summer running cameras. And I think by the time summer ended and bow season started rolling around, we figured we had 4 to 5 bucks that we would target. Three of them were on one particular property and one on a different piece of, and then one on our family farm that is not far from that area, which is kind of what really started all this. And that process led us down this path to figuring out what the next steps were. So, like everybody, hang and hunt, being mobile, all that started showing up. So we got our stands, and we spent a lot of time getting ready and gearing up and shooting bows all summer. And we even planted some food plots on some of these with some throw and grow, which was a big beneficial piece to this, because in an urban setting, deer have certain amounts of access to feed. Like I said, Texas is a feed state, so every person that lives in a neighborhood that backs up to a green belt, it's got a deer feeder. And really, to be honest with you, I underestimated just how hard it would be to find success in an area like that. And I said, they're used to people, they're used to pressure. We saw the guys from Seek One do it. We knew that we could do it. And 2 months into the season, we're kind of scratching our heads, to be honest with you. So, I don't know, Brandon, what do you think about, you know, as that first part of the season progressed?
Yeah, early season, I mean, early season for me is, it is the most exciting part of the season, but at the same time, you kind of want to be hesitant and take your, you feel like you have the time to be able to pick and choose, if you want to call it that. Early season is exciting. It's a new year. You know, this is the first time these deer really have much human interaction as far as, you know, hunting.
Or so we thought. Until we started getting pictures of people walking around on the property.
Exactly. So early season for me is a mixed bag, I guess. I enjoy it. I look forward to it. But there's something about mid-season that you don't have to fight the mosquitoes as often. And, you know, you're not sitting there sweating and worrying about scent quite so much. I mean, when it's early season, you know, some of these mornings, we get up in the morning and it's 86, 87, pushing 90 degrees on some of these days. It's just, it's almost miserable. But that's just early season.
Yeah, it is. And if you're like me, who sweats at the first sign of a little bit of heat, it can be hiking into a place with a stand on your back that you've never hunted before and picking a tree.
And let me tell you, when he says hike in, Kent is one, he will throw a stand on his back and he will walk 5 miles if that's what it takes. Me, on the other hand, I guess I'm a little bit more of a lazy hunter. I don't like to walk 5 miles in the woods when it's 95 degrees. Kent has no problem doing that.
Well, and that's an excellent point to why I felt it was important to start this podcast, because I had in my mind, listening to other podcasts, that it's required that you get deep. It's required that you find the best sign, that you find the best tree, that you can only hunt it on the right wind. And Brandon has proven to me that there's another way to do it, and that you can hunt close to the road, and that you can set a permanent stand, and you can be selective on where you hunt or when you hunt. And sometimes Brandon will hunt it even if the wind's bad, knowing that the deer are close to property and they don't react to human scent that way. So we learned a lot this season when it came to what it means to be mobile and what it means, what the value of having a stationary stand that you can slip into real quietly, especially when you're on a piece of property that has good deer on it and has a large amount of does. You bring all of that together and it makes a big difference.
Okay, let's stop there for a minute.
Stop and save.
Okay, so we talked about my early season, what I enjoy, what I don't necessarily like about it, what I enjoy better, late season, whatever. So tell me about your early season or your season in general. What part of season do you like the best and why?
Man, I think I like the process. I like figuring out the way a deer's moving. I like the hunt, so to speak. This year I had a goal to kill a buck on one of these pieces of property with my bow. And in the beginning of this podcast, we talked about setting a goal and being realistic. And to be honest with you, when we had all these deer on camera this year, I didn't think that was going to be a challenge at all. I thought we had done the hard part. I thought we had ran the cameras, put out the feed, planted the food plots, prepped a few stands, knew which stands I would walk to, or knew which trees I'd walk to with a stand on my back on the right winds and the right weather. Going into opening day, I had kind of checked the box, and I was looking forward to getting other people on deer and putting my brother, my dad, on some of these deer that we were seeing. And I looked up in the end of October. I was heading out of town on a hunting trip, and we had been hunting for 31 days, by the time I left, and I hadn't fired a shot, and really had only been in bow range twice of a deer. And so what I like about that is it's humbling, and it keeps you grounded, and it keeps you determined. That also means that I'm not the best deer hunter in the world, and I recognize midway through the season that because of my work commitments, because of my family commitments, because of my extracurricular activities, I had to find that balance. And really what I enjoyed most this season was finding success towards the end of the season and being able to say, I learned that it's not always in your hands when you got them on camera, when you got them coming to feed, when you got them at a stand, you know they're at. They're smart animals, and they've outsmarted me many, many times, and I think that's what I like most about it is that continual chase. It was fun and exciting acquiring new properties, hanging cameras, and doing that. That, to me, was really enjoyable. But more so, I learned more this year about deer hunting with a bow and about myself than any hunting season in many, many years. It kind of took me back to being a kid, and it relit a fire for me that hadn't been there for a long time. And so that's, I think, probably what I enjoyed the most about it. Like I said, I had an ambitious thought process going into this season based off of some scouting and some things that we did, and got very humbled very quickly, which was frustrating for me because, like I said, I have a 2-hour drive each day, and I listen to these rut reports and these different podcasts, and everybody seems to have great success all the time, and when they don't, they have a very logical reason. They're able to say, articulate that, you know, I wasn't hunting the right wind, or I got busted, or I moved, or I know where I need to be next. And that was not the case for me. I would hunt, I would see some deer, it wouldn't be in the exact right spot, I would adjust. The next time they'd be in the spot that I should have been the last time. And so I think that's really what kind of got me interested in having a podcast. Number one, teach people how to find a balance of being a father, a husband, and a full-time employee. And number two, making sure that people realize that not every person that grabs a bow and the high-dollar stand and the high-dollar equipment is having the success that you perceive them to be happening. And that's kind of what I want this podcast to grow into, is how do you do that? What does that process look like? And how can other people find that success with a realistic mindset and a realistic goal?
Okay, so some good points there. I guess tell me, you know, okay, break down a month for me. You know, and you can even break it down by a week. You know, so in doing all those things, family man, work man, you know, whatever the case. So, I mean, how often are you actually able to get into the woods? How many times do you get out there to scout or field feeders or check cameras or actually sit in a stand and hunt? And, you know, are you hunting all day long? Are you hunting just in the morning, just when the deer are there? I mean, tell me, what's a week look like, or what's a week and a month look like for you, hunting-wise?
Yeah, so the first week of hunting season, we had located some good deer on camera. And I remember the night before season, you and I sat in my...
We did.
At my kitchen table, drinking
beer.
We kind
of put it off. We ate dinner. We talked about it. And then we finally decided to do it. So tell them what we did.
We tried to figure out who was going to get the first crack at the biggest buck we had on camera.
Yeah, so backing up a little bit, we went from Access, I say we, the two of us, I mean, just kind of together as friends, we went from Access to on your family's 200-acre ranch, mm-hmm. to over 1,000 acres of accessible land that we had access to, all in one county, Smith County alone. You know, yeah. So from we had what, seven-ish properties that we had access to?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell them what we found, and then, you know, tell them how it went from there.
I mean, within the last 3 weeks of the hunt season, we found on one property found a buck that we think was in the mid 140s.
Yeah.
We found a 7-point that was probably 20 inches tall.
You look like a ladder. I mean, just like imagine a giraffe with antlers on its head. That's what it looked like.
We had about an 18-inch wide 10-point that was pencil horn. Named him Ticonderoga.
Yeah, we talked about him in the first podcast. You know, that was the first legal deer that we got pictures of on what I'm going to call free land. You know, our permission land.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one of them.
And then across town, we had a piece of property. We started seeing some deer on. As a matter of fact, the first deer I saw out there, I was actually driving to check a camera, and I saw some deer in a pasture that got my attention, stopped and put my binoculars on them, and it was two shooter bucks. And within about a week, I had those deer on camera. So they were both, one was actually the deer that I ended up killing this year, that 10 point, and one was that hooked horn, that 8-point with that hooked horn brow tine. And so we had those deer on camera. So now we're talking about having 5 deer on camera that we're interested in. And my parents' farm that you mentioned, that 200 acres, is notorious for having deer show up at the end of October, middle of November. And I think within the first 2 weeks of the season, that deer that I've been watching for 3 years was on camera.
Yep.
And so, like you said, we're a one buck county. So then we had a decision to make. And of course, the biggest buck on all the cameras gets the attention. So the night before, we sat down at my kitchen table and we rock, paper, scissors for who would get the first shot at that
deer. Best 2 out of 3, yeah.
Yeah,
and you won.
And I did. And then it was a situation like, I won, so what am I going to do? And if it were up to me, I would have hunted that afternoon, but I knew Brandon was itching to go in there. So I said, well, I'll hunt that set in the morning. I'll slip in there early.
So there's one particular spot that our number one target buck preferred to travel over any other piece of property on that, or any other spot on that piece of property.
Yeah.
So yes, the ideal target spot, you know, you want rock, paper, scissors. So, you know, I said, look, you got first dibs at it. If you want to hunt it that morning, go for it. But if you decide you don't want to hunt that spot, I'm going to.
Yeah.
And
that goes back to that. I wanted to play the wind, and Brandon had an intuition about it that I didn't quite have about how close those deer live to someone's home. And I think that it took me a long time this season to get that mindset. And when I finally did, I started having a little bit more success. But so opening morning shows up, and I hang my set. We had put a ladder on that stand, but we did not have a stand on it. So I took my stand there and I hung it, and I went as slow as one could possibly go, because this property's what, 40 acres?
Yeah, it's not a big block of woods. I mean, this is the definition of urban hunting. I mean, one side you have literally the busiest highway filling into Tyler. I mean, it's the busiest road that comes into Tyler. On the other side of this block of woods is just a residential neighborhood, just an urban, you know, there's probably, I don't know, a couple hundred houses on that side of it. So yeah, it's just a strip of woods between two really non-usable areas for these deer.
And really only one access point for us. I mean, you know, you pull off of a main road and you can't pull in very far because you're right there in the middle of them. And we knew the way it lays out, it has an elevation change, and it goes from it's just a gradual hill down to basically where we park. And we knew those deer were bedding in some of the thicker, there's like an old pine cutover in there, and they're bedding in that thicket and coming down to where we had planted that food plot and feeding down there. So I won rock, paper, scissors and elected to sit there that first morning and take the first crack at him. And I think I only saw a doe, and it took a while to see her. I sat there and she came out about 8 o'clock, and that was it. That was I hunted till almost 11 o'clock that day and got down, and we had made a pact that whoever got the first sit got the second sit that afternoon. And so at that point, I left and went to another piece of property that afternoon, and it's the first day of bow season, knowing that we've got a 140-inch deer walking around. And so that was kind of really the start of our season. It all started over rock, paper, scissors, and who was going to get the first crack at a buck. And our goals quickly changed from, okay, we need to get us a legal buck on the ground because we've done a good job getting permission property. And we'll get into that as this thing progresses, but our goals changed quickly, and the time we had was rapidly dissolving. And when you start a season, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like October 1's here, or October 3rd this past year. We've got until January 3rd. That's 3 months to get this thing done. And like I said, I didn't get my buck on the ground until right after Thanksgiving this year. And so that's kind of how we started things.
Yeah, it's hunting can be a challenge. I'll tell you my, and maybe we should save it for another episode. I think we will save it for another episode. My buck.
Yeah, we definitely need to save that for episode
two. It can be its own episode in and of itself. But I shot a deer, and we got a whole story on that. But getting back to the, how often, how often, you're able to get in the woods a week. You know, Kent mentioned earlier he's in the medical field. He has a little bit more of a schedule, per se. He has a pretty long commute to work. I, on the other hand, do not. I have a very flexible schedule where I can kind of set my schedule throughout the day and meet with my customers and clients. So during the day, I can do a lot of activities, that Kent can't physically do until he's at home in the evenings, and his wife expects him to be, partake in dinner and play with the kids before they get ready for bed, that kind of stuff. Whereas I can do some of my, prepping for hunting and prepping for the week and doing some of that during the week. I can fill up feeders and go replace, slot in a new battery pack and a couple of cameras that are running low or whatever. It's a major time saver for me. It also allows me to be at the house in the evenings and not have to worry about hunting, except for, when my phone dings two or three times in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what has made us a good team. Brandon obviously has carried a lot of the weight on the groundwork piece of it. But, at the same time, we've had several conversations about, I think you need to hunt now, or I think you need to lay off of it. And recognizing that when we don't have that much time, it's hard to choose to lay off of it. But yeah, some of those decisions are joint decisions for us. And like I said in the beginning, we haven't been doing this for just a whole lot of time. So we're not trying to preach to people that have been hunting for a long time and know the ins and outs. We have been hunting for a long time, but we've been specifically targeting deer with a bow for 4 years now total.
Yeah,
maybe
three to four years.
And we want to share that journey with you guys about what it took us to get to what we call barely above average. And that's why the name of this podcast is Barely Above Average, because your average hunter will go out and sit in a stand and enjoy the morning and walk away. We wanted to have that success. If we're going to invest the time, if we're going to spend the time chasing that, you want to have that success. And so we consider, one deer barely above average.
Absolutely.
Right? So there's a lot of people that go out and fill a whole set of tags in a year. And one with a bow for us is a big step in the right direction. And it really kind of takes the pressure off when you're working through your season. Yeah, so I think when you bring in a podcast or when you're talking about things that you want other outdoorsmen to hear, things that stood out to me listening to other folks talk was you always hear about the success stories and you don't hear about the failures. And, you know, we've talked a little bit throughout this episode about why I felt motivated and why we felt motivated to start bringing these conversations to light. Yes, we had some success this year, but we had several failures, and they were tough pills to swallow. And you asked me earlier, you know, what about it do I like? And I think it's the challenge of hunting whitetails with a bow in an area that is not easily huntable. And throughout this process, we will talk about those failures and be open and honest, because I think it's important for people to hear that. I think a lot of people walk away when they have a failure, or they stop pursuing it because it's challenging. It's not easy. You invest a lot of time. You spend time at work. You spend time balancing that with family. And then the moment happens and something goes wrong. And then what?
And then it's a gut punch, you know. And then it gets you out of your lull, gets you out of your groove, gets you down. But the thing is, there's always another deer, or there's always another doe, or there's always another duck flying, or whatever it is. You know, you have to get back up and keep going, and just know that there's going to be failures. I mean, what we do inherently, you know, deer hunting, I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong. And that's what we want to share with y'all. Just like Ken said, there's going to be failures. You just got to embrace them and keep moving. Learn from them most of all. Learn what you did wrong and try not let it happen again.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that learning from your mistakes is fine-tuning equipment, is fine-tuning processes. You know, we keep going back to balancing this family and hunting process. As you know, I'm 33 years old. I've got a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old. And when you have the opportunity, when you invest the time and you get the opportunity to make a shot on an animal and something doesn't go right, you feel like you've not only let yourself down, the animal, you feel like you've let everybody that's been hanging in there with you trying to get this done to put some meat on the table, right? So it's really humbling, and it kind of sets you back. For me this year, it just dug deeper and made me want to work harder and made me want to be in the stand that much more. But what I learned was there's a quality versus quantity situation when it comes to being hunting deer in your backyard, or in backyard meaning your neck of the woods or close to your house. Finding that quality hunt is more important than spending a lot of seat time. You hear guys, and I've done it, sitting in a stand from daylight to dark, right? Well, part of me in our interest in discussing these topics is, yeah, you can hunt daylight to dark, but sometimes it may be better to get down at 10, practice t-ball with your kid, cook a family dinner, have a couple beers with some friends and family, and invest that time in your family. That way, when you do achieve success, it's that much better. When I shot my deer this year, which we'll talk about in later episodes, that whole process, everybody came to check it out, came to take pictures, came to look at it. My family was there. My kids were excited. That, to me, made it all worth it. And wanting to make that happen early in the season is something that drives me. Or make that happen at a time when it doesn't feel like luck. It feels like purpose. And I think that's something that we'll strive to discuss with everybody that chooses to listen to us and hopefully continues to listen to us.
Yeah, so we want y'all to stick with us. This is a little bit of a learning experience for us as well, you know, being our very first episode on our very own podcast. But stick with us. It's going to get better. We have some good stories to share. Success stories, failure stories, what we're looking for in the future stories. So just hang around. It's going to get better.
Yeah, I've got some exciting things that I think people would want to hear about people, and hopefully people that will want to discuss with us and everybody about how I got into hunting, the people that taught me some of the tips of the trade, some of my very best friends to talk about that are extremely successful and do have that time, and continue to to move this forward and talk about our last season is what we'll focus on. We'll maybe operate in a season behind until we get caught up. And, you know, right now we're heading down the road to a fishing trip that we found out how to sneak away from. And so hopefully we'll get to talk about some of those little adventures that we do as well, not just about deer hunting. This is barely above average outdoors, which is not just about deer hunting. It's about enjoying all aspects of it. And we spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to do that, because growing up, one of the most important things to me and my family was that quality family time, having trips where you got to get out outside and spending that time with family. And we want to share that with everybody else, and we want to encourage that and know that it's obtainable even when you work hard. It's 9:15 at night and we're driving down the road, and I worked 80 hours this week. And so that's part of the drive, dedication, and balance that all exists, and it's important to keep going down that road. So we hope you hang in there with us. Keep listening to this podcast. Be looking for our Instagram and Facebook page coming out, Barely Above Average Outdoors. And hit the subscribe link when you get the opportunity.